Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Hi friends, this is Mel Barrett. I have a short public service announcement for you before we get into this next episode. Human trafficking is a situation in which an individual is compelled to work or engage in commercial sex through the use of force, fraud, or coercion. If the individual is under the age of 18 and engaging in commercial sex, they are experiencing trafficking, regardless of whether force, fraud, or coercion is also taking place. If you or someone you know is being trafficked, please contact these resources. Call the National Human Trafficking Hotline toll-free 24/7 at 1-888-373-7888 or text the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 233-733 or chat with the National Human Trafficking Hotline via humantraffickinghotline.org/chat. Interpreters are only available via phone call. Report missing children or child pornography to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-843-5678. This episode of The In-Between is intended for mature audiences and includes topics such as emotional, sexual, and physical violence. Testimony shared by guests of the show is their own and does not reflect the views of Mel Barrett or Ruby Grace Productions. Listener discretion is advised.
Dear Honorable Judge Jones, Jr., I am writing this letter on behalf of my dear friend, Veronica Rodriguez.
I am writing this letter in support of Veronica Rodriguez.
I currently serve as a Human Resources NCO within the Pennsylvania Army National Guard and have proudly been in service for over a decade. I am writing this letter in full support of Veronica Rodriguez.
I am writing to provide a character reference for Airman First Class Veronica Rodriguez.
I am writing this letter in support of Veronica Rodriguez.
I have had the privilege of knowing Veronica for approximately 5 years.
I am writing this letter as a character witness on behalf of Veronica Rodriguez.
Kind, intelligent, thoughtful, loyal, funny, and family-oriented.
Veronica is not a threat to society. She is a blessing to it. She is a woman of service, loyalty, and faith. She is an active volunteer, church leader, and military member.
To imprison a woman like Veronica is to deepen the wound already carved by a world that too often silences women like us. She deserves support, not punishment, not confinement. She deserves healing,
I have had the privilege of knowing Veronica Rodriguez for over 20 years. She is the type of person who consistently goes out of her way for others.
My family and I believe that Veronica was raped. We have seen the toll it's taken on her emotionally, spiritually, and physically. And yet, she continues to walk forward with integrity and strength.
Veronica does not belong in prison. She belongs in the community she loves.
I struggled with severe anxiety, panic attacks, and PTSD that affected every aspect of my
life,
both professionally and personally.
Caring, and deeply empathetic.
My performance at work suffered.
She treats others with respect, shows genuine concern for the well-being of those around her, and values fairness. She has consistently demonstrated that she would never deliberately harm another person.
Her emotional response in the aftermath, brushing things off or laughing to mask her pain, was something deeply understood, as I too have coped similarly during traumatic experiences.
A young woman in her 20s, slut-shamed and labeled a whore simply because of her age, gender, and social behavior was disheartening and deeply unprofessional.
Years after the event, when she finally shared the details with me in confidence, I was overwhelmed by the depth of her pain.
Or her character. She is not someone who would casually engage in a relationship, let alone falsely accuse someone of rape. Her conduct professionally and personally has always reflected maturity, discretion, and deep respect.
Staying within her limits, but never making excuses. I vividly remember her cracking a joke about blood, sweat, and tears.
She described what happened with the man involved in this case. It did not sound anything like her past relationships that I had seen her in before.
I immediately drove over an hour to the Lebanon County Courthouse.
The prosecution has painted Veronica could not be further from the truth.
Waiting for her release.
She's not promiscuous or manipulative.
Veronica has always been consistent.
She isn't a home wrecker nor a deceitful criminal. She's a soft-hearted woman of faith who was just being a young adult.
She shows genuine care and interest in those around in the Bible study group.
Recording what is happening does not feel like a crime. It feels like a safeguard.
I didn't even know
it is a way to record. It is a way to create a record when you fear that your voice alone will not be believed.
I believe Ms. Rodriguez's actions were rooted in fear and survival.
I met with Veronica many times over the past 2.5 years. I found her to be forthright, honest, and brave.
A 16-year prison sentence is far too severe for a woman of her character and
contribution. I believe Veronica. As someone who has witnessed firsthand countless cases in the military involving both men and women,
I found it difficult to complete even the simplest daily tasks. Driving, for instance, became terrifying, as my abuser often threatened and assaulted me while I was behind the wheel. Even now, I frequently check my mirrors and panic when I see a car resembling his. But fighting every day. I share all this because I know what it means to survive trauma. Veronica is one of the strongest, kindest women I know.
Veronica, a young woman in her 20s, slut-shamed and labeled a whore simply because of her age, gender, and social behavior was disheartening and deeply unprofessional. The prosecution weaponized her character in a way that was both unjust and unsubstantiated. I can say unequivocally none of her prior conduct, including the time period before the assault by Fahad Pervez, ever violated good order and discipline. Veronica Rodriguez is not only a valued friend,
she has been failed,
but she has never failed.
If anything,
she has
shown
a
level of restraint and grace that inspires
her. When she described what happened with the man involved in this case,
she is not someone who would casually engage in a relationship, let alone falsely accuse someone of rape. Her conduct professionally and personally has always reflected maturity, discretion, and deep respect.
She's just a young woman that her voice alone
trying to make sense of a terrifying
that kind of
situation.
Turnout speaks volumes
I believe
about who
her.
She is.
Someone
who's loved, care, and character,
and so does
leaves
his family.
Lasting imprints on
Veronica
every
is
meets.
Not who the prosecutors say she is. She's not a fighter. She's a lover, a nurturer, and someone deeply rooted in her faith.
Those are real people's words describing who Veronica Rodriguez is as a human being. They have written in from all walks of life, friends, coworkers, folks who grew up with Veronica or attended church with her. Some of these people are exes of Veronica's. Two of her exes even testified on her behalf at trial. These are military leaders and human resource leaders, victims advocates, survivors who don't even know Veronica personally but recognize themselves in her story. Pages upon pages of words from people who are asking a judge to look at this person before him and understand that she is not guilty of a false report and shouldn't spend even a day in prison for recording what she says was sexual assault. These letters are written to the Honorable Judge Charles T. Jones, Jr., who will decide Veronica's fate on August 20th, 2025. For those of you just joining us, hi, I'm your host, Mel Barrett. Welcome to The In-Between. I recommend going back to episode 1 of From Victim to Accused, the Veronica Rodriguez story, and start there. This episode might confuse you if you're just jumping in cold. In this episode, we're going to be hearing from the man the DA says is the victim in this case, Fahad Pervez. Just to recap, in January of 2023, Veronica Rodriguez, an enlisted Air Force National Guardswoman, says she went on a date with Fahad Pervez, who told her he was new to the area and the military. After dinner and several drinks, Fahad sequestered Veronica's glasses, wallet, keys, and phone, and he drove them to a secluded wooded area in rural Pennsylvania, proceeded to pressure her to have sex with him, to which she said no several times, and rejected his advances like when he tried to put his hands in her pants 3 separate times, or when he kissed her so hard her nose bled. And after all of her polite tactics didn't work, Fahad took her clothes off, pulled her onto his lap, pinning her between his chest and the back of the passenger seat in his Jeep, and he had sex with her. She's got the bruises, scrapes, a rape kit, and a record of the incident to prove it. See, Veronica started feeling uncomfortable with Fahad at dinner, so she turned her audio recorder on her phone. She's not stupid. If she was attacked, or worse, murdered, there would be a record of it. And she was right. The military believed her, but the local district attorney, Pierre Hess Graff, after 2 police officers from the Fort Indian Town Gap Police Department presented the evidence to her, decided Veronica was the guilty party. After just one interview with her, the police started treating her like the suspect, and Fahad Pervez, a married doctor, who was not in fact new to the area or the military, who was in fact a major in the Air National Guard, was not investigated at all. Shortly after what appears to be a biased and incomplete investigation, Pierre Hess Graf charged Veronica Rodriguez with one false report and two felony counts of wiretapping. These charges carry up to 16 years in prison. Fahad Pervez, the alleged victim in the case, he was discharged from the military and that was it. He hasn't gone on record about his experiences or his side of the story until now. He agreed to speak with me and answer any questions I have. And I have a lot of questions. I want to preface what you're about to hear by saying I think it took courage to speak with me, and I'm appreciative that Fahad took the time. We are not in agreement about anything in this case, or quite frankly, anything about how some men interpret sexual situations. And I was very upfront with him that I believe women, and that I believe Veronica. But I think it's important to hear his side as well. I didn't attack him. I tried to hear him. I did ask some pointed questions. I wanted to keep it cordial so we could have a conversation. If I had come with anger or blame, we wouldn't have gotten anywhere. As a survivor of sexual assault and abuse myself, this was an incredibly difficult conversation, but it's also an important conversation to have. I think if you can get past the cringiness of it, there are lessons to be learned for all of us in this back and forth. I'm not releasing the entire interview here because I think, honestly, you'd be bored out of your skull. But there are important bits that you need to hear. My plan was to compare it to his testimony at trial, which I will do in certain instances, but honestly, the direct examination by ADA Mueller and the cross by Ian Airgood were so weak, in my opinion, there's not a lot of there. And in the interest of full transparency, I will release the full interview in the private In-Between Investigator Club. If you want to hear the whole thing, head over there. I'll link in the show notes.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hey, I'm sorry to reach out directly to you, but I don't know how else to handle it. Just when I think this nightmare is behind me, it somehow comes back. I understand you've been reaching out to my acquaintances as part of some story on the case. I believe in freedom of speech and want the truth to come out in whatever way possible. I just don't know how to prove my innocence. At her trial, the entire audio of our date was played, along with surveillance videos from the night and several of her text messages between her and her social network. The DA also read the entire transcript of our text exchange before and after the date, including the night in question. I am a law-abiding citizen, father of young kids, a son, a brother, a combat veteran, and just a simple guy who was in the wrong place at the wrong time. I never imagined ever getting tangled up in such a situation. I don't know how else to prove that it wasn't what she later claimed it was. I was going through a divorce and just a shitty time in my life. You can ask me anything you want. You can verify anything and everything I say, and you can even have a copy of anything used as evidence from the case. It was all released by the DA office. We were under a gag order previously, which was lifted when a verdict was reached. Leading up to the trial, she was able to raise $20,000 under false pretenses and just completely destroy my life and reputation further, but I couldn't defend myself without breaking the law. I still don't want her life to be destroyed any further. And as part of my victim impact statement, I was planning on asking the judge for leniency in her sentencing. If you have already assumed I'm guilty because I'm a man, I'm sorry, but I'm not that guy. I have had nothing to hide, and I fully cooperated with the police from day one. I'm not asking for anything from you, but I just hope you do the right thing I have been defamed, slandered, and harassed in every way possible. Besides being heartbreaking, it's simply exhausting and just depressing to deal with. Please let me know if there's anything you need from me. Respectfully, Fahad.
Hi, Fahad. First off, thanks so much for emailing me. I'm sure it makes you terribly uncomfortable, and I'm supremely appreciative you've reached out. I had every intention of reaching out to you personally with no hope that you'd speak to me, so this is a pleasant surprise. I think this is presenting both of us a rare opportunity to have an important conversation about this case, and I would be very open to speaking with you. I appreciate the invite to ask you questions, and I'm hoping we can speak on the record. It's my job to verify information I've received, and so as much as your acquaintances are unhappy that I've reached out, I'm simply doing my due diligence as a journalist. That being said, the best way to clear your name is to go on record with your side of the story, so I'm hoping you'll be open to speaking on the phone. Monday is the best day for me, schedule-wise. Please let me know when you're available to chat. Thanks again for reaching out. Talk soon. Mel Barrett. During the days leading up to this interview, I only told a few people that it was happening. I was nervous. I didn't want to get it wrong. I didn't want to feel traumatized myself. So I sought the advice of my mentors, Amber Hunt and Rebecca Lavoie. I spoke with Carl Hirschman again as well. I asked him to guide me through the questions that should have been asked that the detectives never asked Fahad. I showed these three my list of questions, and all agreed he might not even show up for the interview. Some said he'd probably hang up on me. So I knew my main goal was to keep Fahad talking. I was going to have to be nice. I'm not always good at nice, so this was going to take some theatrics to get through this.
I'm going to ask him to tell me his side, and I'm going to ask him to, you know, about his life, and, you know, and I want to know, I want to understand all of that. It's a very important conversation as far as I'm concerned, because women don't often get a chance to sit down with someone who's been accused of sexual assault and say, well, what's your psychology behind this? What do you think? Why do you think this happened? And then to have an open, honest conversation with somebody to say, you don't think it's problematic that she said no? You don't think it's problematic that she was probably drunk? And why did you take her glasses? Why did you take her wallet? Why did you take her keys? Why did you have her home address on the GPS when you got into the Jeep? You know, even if he is squirrely about answering those kind of questions, I really hope it makes him start to think, like, maybe I'm reading. Like, I know I don't want to be that hopeful. I'm not that dumb. But the more conversations that we can have about this with people who are accused of sexual assault and women who have experienced sexual assault, I think it's breaking down some barriers, you know?
And what you're doing, I commend you that you're doing this, too. I know this is your passion and, you know, your job and stuff, but in your profession, but it does make you, you'll make enemies.
Oh, yeah.
I have definitely, you know.
I already have.
It's a badge of honor. So.
Yeah, I guess. I'm just like my criminologist friend is like, do you have Simply Safe on the door? And maybe you should go get your like concealed carry license. And I'm like, yeah, I suppose I should probably do something like that.
Also, in the days leading up to the interview, I had finally verified the Venmo transaction between Fahad and the chief of police's husband, Joseph Kramer, from May 22, 2025. So I knew I was going to ask him about his relationship with Devin and Joseph Kramer, and I was expecting pushback. I knew I was also going to have to address the comments Shahana Doyle made about Fahad, quote-unquote, working with her father, Roland Doyle, whom she has accused of sex trafficking her and other children in the Mechanicsburg area. More questions that would likely shut him down or cause him to hang up on me. I went into it knowing this was a long shot. What I didn't expect was that Fahad Pervez would lie instead of hanging up. I guess I should have, since he allegedly lied on the stand under oath. Here are voice actors playing the parts of Ian Ergood, Veronica's attorney, questioning Fahad Pervez during cross-examination in Veronica's May 2025 trial.
When you were interviewed by the Fort Indian Town Gap Police, they had asked you if you had heard her say no at all that evening, right?
This was 2 years ago. Whatever I told them, you have a copy of my report, I guess.
And you said no, I didn't hear her say no at all, right?
I guess so. I mean, she didn't say no to the, like, I guess in that context, like she wasn't saying no to having sex, no.
One of the things I noticed in speaking with Fahad is that he very rarely uses definitive language. He's very mealy-mouthed. A lot of you knows, whatevers. During cross-examination, I noticed when he was asked a yes-no question, he would answer, okay, instead of yes or no. Ergud never corrected the record, so instead of a definitive yes-no, Fahad gives a gray affirmative. Here's an example.
Well, do you remember telling her, why aren't you drinking your drink? You have to keep up with me.
Okay.
I just got the transcripts of the trial a few days ago, so I'm still studying them. But I was shocked by the questioning. I expected the Commonwealth to go easy on Fahad, but I was not expecting the weak cross from Veronica's team. There's so much to pick apart in his statements and answers. I guess I'm going to have to do it myself. After a quick break.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Fahad, Rebel.
Hey, Fahad, it's Mel Barrett. I'm just getting in touch. It's 8:30. I'll try you back in a few minutes. Let's see if he actually answers the phone. Hey, Fahad, how are you?
Hey, I'm all right. Sorry, I think it goes to voicemail automatically. So.
Oh, no worries.
Appreciate the practice.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks. First of all, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. I expect it to be an uncomfortable conversation, probably for both of us, but I just want to say thank you. I know it's not a comfortable conversation, so I appreciate you having the conversation with me. I think it's incredibly important.
Sure.
And I want to clarify one thing. You know, in the email when I was like, you know, you can clear your name. What I meant by that, those are the wrong words. I'll say that right off the bat, and I apologize for those
thank
words.
You.
What I mean, what I mean by that is you haven't had any opportunity to tell your story. You know, I've read through some of the police reports. I've, you know, read through transcripts. And I know Veronica has been able to tell her side of things. The DA has been able to tell their side of things. But no one's really heard from you. And I think it is important to have that conversation and for you to tell me what you were going through and what, you know, your mindset was at the time and how this happened with you. And then if you don't mind, I'm obviously going to ask you some questions about it. And I appreciate you being open to answering questions that I have.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you. I mean, just sorry. It's it's a heavy topic. You know, I've always like, I will just try to block it out. But
yeah,
thank you for saying what you just said, because yes, you're right. You know, I mean, like in today's society or whatever, like the male is automatically assumed to be guilty. And I get it. Look, it's a dangerous world and it's unsafe for women. That's the sad truth.
Yeah.
So I understand, you know, why we hold, you know, males automatically, whatever it is, right? But
yeah,
you're well, I've never been able to talk about it, and it's just, you know, it is what it is at this point. And I just want to put it behind me, but I know that's never going to happen, because first of all, you know, there's no privacy on the internet, and plus it's something I'm going to have to, like, when my kids are older, is it something I'm going to have to share with them, you know, so I don't want them to be caught off guard. In terms of clear your name, you know, those are wrong words. I appreciate you saying that, you know, because I was never charged, and like, I never thought I did anything wrong, but we can talk about like the mistake that I made. And then I also, I mean, I have all the other stuff that DA sent me a copy of it, you know, before I even testified.
Yeah.
Like, our entire text transcript, and oh gosh, they like read everything in court. It was just awkward and embarrassing.
I would be open to seeing the text conversations. I've seen some of them. I've seen, you know, bits and pieces here and there. And I've talked to the experts in the case. And, you know, I've talked to some of the lawyers and I've talked to witnesses. So, and let me tell you where I'm coming from, just so I'm very clear.
Sure.
I'm a journalist, and I do, my baseline is I do believe women. And so when I come at this case, what I see and what I saw even before I started researching was, you know, a young 20-something who had accused someone of sexual assault, wasn't believed, and then was immediately charged with a very, like, strong sentence. You know, the DA is asking for 16 years. So,
oh, my God. That's, wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that. No. Holy so shit, the DA is asking for 7 years for one of the felony counts of wiretapping, 7 years for the other, and 2 years for a false report. So when I'm looking at this, and I get angry about it because I'm looking at this from the situation of, let's say this is a he said, she said thing. Let's say you say it's consensual. She eventually said it wasn't consensual. Do we really need to have a felony wiretap that could cost this kid 16 years? I disagree with that. And that's where my anger comes from. But I also want to get down to, because for me, and I'll be very honest with you, I am a survivor of sexual assault from when I was 15 years old. So I have that trigger, you know? And so when I hear cases like this, I think what it comes down to is we're still in a he said, she said kind of situation where, you know, I think the psychology is very complicated. And I think...
I don't want to interrupt you, but first of all, I'm so sorry about what happened to you. Like, my heart goes out to you. And it's a significant trauma, you know, and it's something that alters your life. So I feel your pain. And, like, I, from the bottom of my heart, you know, like, this is not one of those he said, she said situation. This was... I'm going to say this in a positive way, like, sure, whatever way, but... I think she was scared and I was scared, and it was the military thing, you know. I think she just kind of made a line. I don't know, maybe she was pressured into it by her, you know, command or something to get the pressure off of her. And then she just kind of like kept doubling down, and she kind of like trapped herself, you know, because if you listen to the audio and like if you read the text, we were on good terms, like during, you know, before, during, after, the same night. I mean, I'm just saying, you can listen to it for it. That's what I meant by the audio figure. It's one thing to read the transcript, but if you hear our conversation, oh my God, I mean, it's like a cringe, awkward first date. And, you know, like, I'm not the most, like, the smoothest guy. I'm just like shy kid from whatever, nerdy guy from, you know, New York. And either way, it was whatever it was. And like, mom, even my therapist said, you know, like she kind of feels my pain because I feel bad for her as well. You know, like it's just a terrible situation. And like, there are no winners in this, you know, and I don't want her life to be destroyed and more so than it already has been, you know, and like both of us have suffered, I'm sure. And it just sucks, you know. So try to answer whatever you want. But it's, again, I just want to clarify, it's not a he, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way, but that's why I wanted you to listen to it. It's not a he said, she said, because there was, everything was like cordial, and everything was fine. And then, you know, even like that night and that the next day or whatever, like during, and I don't know if you saw the text between her and her friends, you know, she was like boasting about it almost. Which I never saw until the trial. I had no idea. And that's not my business, right? The way she talks to her friends, it's actually like not my, you know, like she's a young person, and if she wants to make comments or vulgar comments with her girlfriends, that's, you know, that's her right. That's her decision.
Yeah, for sure. So, and I, you know, we could get into the psychology of it later, but one of the things that I think that at the head of this is, This could have gone away for both of you if they had just said, you know, if the police had just said, no, we don't think this happened. We're going to charge her with a false report and we can deal with that in court. But to add the felony wiretap, they piled on these charges, and that's what actually gave it steam and press. And that's why everyone's talking about it, because the DA chose to take this to trial and ask for 16 years. You know, it's crazy. But anyway, that's beside the point.
On the flip side, she could have destroyed my life. You know, it wasn't like some sort of non-consensual force thing that she claimed it was. So, I mean, I don't want her to get 16 years. That's besides the point. But, and I don't know why they went after, you know, like why they have such a harsh stance. But from my point of view, first of all, I don't want her life to be destroyed. But she almost absolutely like could have destroyed my life completely, you know, like I wouldn't be able to practice medicine. I would have to, like, I don't know, find another career. I wouldn't be able to afford my mortgage or like my child support or whatever, right? So I don't, and it's hard to kind of feel sympathy for men sometimes, but just an accusation, it's a huge deal. And like, just the fact that who I am, you know, just, it was a shock to me that it turned into that. I mean, I thought we were both in trouble for fraternizing, and I accepted that, you know, mistake and I owned up to it, you know, and I was reprimanded and like I completely own up to that, you know, mm-hmm. that was completely wrong and unprofessional and whatever it was. And I was just, you know, no excuses, but I was going through like a shitty time. And that's what I actually talked to her about a lot, you know, just like the separation and divorce and whatnot. But by the way, I'm saying maybe that was why they went after her. But I can't comment on that.
Yeah, no,
of course. I never asked them to do that. And I actually never went after her, despite what my lawyers had suggested or my employer had suggested that, you know, you have to sue or whatever, right, for like defamation or slander, because it wasn't even her. I think her acquaintances, they literally tried to like destroy my life. They were calling my employer, reaching out to my family, like my sister, you know, my ex-wife, and whoever they can talk to, you know, posting on Facebook, like friends from like high school, you know. And it's just like, it's something I'm gonna have to deal with for the rest of my life, you know, this accusation. And like how I think the one person who just kind of became a crusader for it, and I mean, whatever her reason is, but I am not that guy. Then it's up to you to believe that or not, I guess.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, it's fine. That's one of the reasons why we're having this conversation. I think it is up to people to decide what they think happened and what, you know, who's right, who's wrong, however that might be. So it's super important, instead of just having you as this sort of boogeyman in this story, to hear your voice and to talk through this. I think it's really important. So that being said, can you talk me through... Can you give me sort of the Cliff Notes version of how you saw the night going, and be starting from when you guys met up at Snitz Creek?
I mean, you've read the transcripts, right? Everything was fine. It was like an awkward first date, and we had normal conversation. You know, everything was just like as you anticipate. At some point, you know, we did start making out and things got hot and heavy. And then like that's literally when we were found in the parking lot. And that's when things kind of like ended, you know, as in like I wish I could play the audio, but whatever, that's besides the point. You can hear us like laughing and like talking about it like afterwards. I'm like, hey, where are my clothes? Where is this? Blah, 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 mm-hmm. you know? And then like the second we wrapped it up, you know, like we both drove home, like our, you know, we both went our separate ways. And like I texted her, make sure she got home that night. Mm-hmm. And then we were texting the next day, and everything was honestly like everything was in my mind. Everything was like going perfectly fine, and I wanted to see her again. We actually made plans the next day. That didn't work out. And then, you know, I was gonna come back in a couple months, and we were gonna hang out. It's when we got, I guess, when the police blotter reached the commands, and we were both called out by our command for socializing after hours. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she felt the need to deflect or take the pressure off of her or whatever her reason is, right? I can't read her mind. She said it was non-consensual, and that's when it turned into this thing. And I didn't hear that part like weeks later. I just assumed we were both in trouble for, you know, fraternizing for the military child. Yeah. But then, and that's a big deal. It's a huge deal, right? So yes. And that's why I was like dealing with, you know, like my command, my unit, and then it turns out when they're like, hey, so what if she has claimed, you know, non-consent? I'm like, what do you mean? No, that's not, you know, I was like, no, that's preposterous. Like, why would she say that? You know, we were on great terms. And when I heard that that's actually what she claimed, like, honestly, my mouth went dry, my jaw dropped. And I was like, how can she say that? Like, I wish I could talk to her and be like, hey, what happened? You know, it's like, well, anyhow, so sorry, that was not a cliff note.
One of the things I wish I could do here is share with you Veronica's side. That was the Cliff Notes version, according to Fahad. But there are so many details that are missing from this story. Cliff Notes or not, he's really sort of jumping over some of the biggest issues here, which I'm going to start digging into here in a moment. But unfortunately, Veronica is still not allowed to speak about this case, according to her lawyers. But unlike Veronica's lawyers, I'm going to ask some harder questions here. I'm going to try not to jump in too much with any kind of interpretation. I want to sort of play this out so that you can hear our conversation. But occasionally, I feel like I'm going to need to explain a little bit further. So bear with me. So you hadn't really been dating. This was sort of like a first time thing. And it was awkward and weird. Were you new to the area? Tell me a little bit about your military experience.
That's why there's so much, like, I don't even, I have no idea where all of this stuff, like, originate from. I only go out there for, I used to go out there for drills. You know, I just go there for like 6 days, do one military obligation, and then go back to New York.
Yeah.
That's really the extent of it. Ended up meeting her at the command or whatever, like, what's the word I'm thinking of? The wing, you know, like the main section. And mm-hmm. she's from there. So that's how the conversation started, really.
We're probably going to get into some tougher questions, and they might make you feel uncomfortable if at any time you don't want to answer. It's totally fine, but I just want to put that out there. I want to start asking a little bit more detail about the date and what happened. So when you were at Snitz Creek and you discovered that it wasn't open and you were trying to figure out where to go next and you were looking up Frog's Hollow, did you ever get the sense at that point that she didn't want to be on the date? Like, did she want to, you know, did she say, like, can we do this some other time? Like, did you ever get the sense that she was uncomfortable?
I don't think so. And no, because I mean, we were completely sober. Like, we both had our cars, you know, like, why? And we were both looking up places, and, you know, we just kind of found the first place and we both drove over there completely on our own volition. Mm-hmm. I never felt like she was that uncomfortable to the point, you know, where she felt unsafe, because I would hope I'm not that guy, or I feel so shitty, like, if I ever come across like that guy.
Yeah,
I mean, she even made a comment, though. She made a joke. I mean, I hope it was a joke. You know, she was like, hey, I'm just here for the free food, you know, or whatever. You know, I thought it was just like a stupid, like, whatever, you know, tacky statement. But I didn't really let it get to me. That was like during the dinner or whatever. And we drove back from there back to the parking lot. And that's where, you know, we ended up like making out. And then we were looking for more privacy. And that's why I was like, hey, there's a place. And I just found that place earlier that day, and I was like, "That's a great view. It's private," and that's where we ended up going.
You think that?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Okay. Your question was if she ever felt uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I never felt that at all. I mean, then you can listen to the recording for yourself. You know, just our conversation.
So throughout that, do you think throughout the evening that you ever sensed that she was feeling uncomfortable?
No, not at all. I mean, I was awkward. If you hear me talking, I was uncomfortable just from the fact that I'm out with this younger, you know, girl or whatever, and I was just making awkward, you know, small talk. Literally, you can see it, you can hear it, you know. Like, I never thought if she was uncomfortable, the day wouldn't proceed. Like, there is nothing, you know, to go off of. Like, it's like everything, it's a two-person decision, you know, any socializing. But
I was there ever any time, you know, so I'll bring up some of the claims that Veronica has made so that you can tell me your version.
Sure.
And how you see it happening. So there were, she, you know, throughout the night, she said that you were asking about her phone and why she was on her phone. And then at some point you took her phone and tried to use her face to get her face ID to open her phone. Did those things happen?
No, that's, I think the DA asked me that too, or the police asked me that too. And I'm like, no, I thought it was just kind of obnoxious, you know, but I feel like every young person is like, or younger person, I mean, I'm glued to my phone for work, but, you know, she was on her phone a lot and just kind of like texting. And I just thought that was kind of like obnoxious, you know? So
yeah.
I think I kind of got annoyed at one point, and I might've just in like a flirty way, I'm like, oh, I'm going to take your phone, you know, but there was nothing. I mean, she had her phone the entire time. She recorded the entire thing, which actually saved my life, honestly. I mean, that's what, at least what the police went by, you know, which she had deleted before she turned her phone in. But no, I did not try to like take her phone or like enforce anything or, you know, be aggressive or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know why she claims that, but it is what it is.
And then I know that there was some confusion about, you know, taking her glasses or not taking her glasses. And I mean, at one point, I think she claimed that you had her phone, her keys, her wallet, and her glasses while you were in the car.
Yeah, I think that's, of course, she claims that, but you can watch, if you watch a gas station video, she had her phone and she was walking perfectly fine without her glasses. I'm gonna be honest with you, when we had started making out, that's when I think she put her glasses on like the dashboard or like in the glove compartment, you know, like in the cup holders. Mm-hmm. She had access to everything. It was like right there. That's why I'm like, where would I hide them? Like, they're right there. And I even say it, I'm like, hey, your glasses are there, you know, like the whole time. They literally only came off when we were like making out or whatever.
Yeah, I think so when I was reading the transcripts, I think the way that I read it was that when she asked where my glasses are, you said I've put them in a safe place, and you said that you didn't want to give them back to her yet.
I mean, I I don't know exactly how I said it, but it was supposed to be like a flirty comment, you know, and like, because we were like making out, but she had access to him the whole time. And I think that was verified or at least validated, like in another part of like the audio transcript. I'm like, hey, you know, your guys are there like the whole time. And they were like right there in front of her, like in the front passenger seat where she had pugged them. And I mean, she's claiming that she couldn't see, but glasses were never the problem, but that's besides the point. It literally only came off because we were whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Moving out, I guess.
So, you know, going back to the transcripts, there were a couple of instances, and I don't want to be too graphic and I don't want to make you uncomfortable, but there was, you know, the situation where you had, it appeared that you were trying to put your hand in her pants and she said, you know, dude, no, stop that. And then you said you weren't going to, you know, put your fingers inside of her, you know. And so at that point, what's going through your mind as far as how she's responding to you?
I mean, it's like one of those things that this is, again, 2.5 years ago. I never thought she was uncomfortable. And I mean, I don't see, you have to listen to the audio. I don't know how the transcripts come off, but she was playful the entire time. I was playful the entire time. There was nothing, and you can hear it too, there was nothing forceful or uncomfortable or, what's the word? I don't even know, like, I guess harsh or, I don't know, unnatural. Like, it was just kind of like two people being stupid, you know, like hooking up in a car.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, when I read it, it's tough because, you know, there are moments where she said, you're trying to kiss me, stop. And, you know, she says no a couple of times. And I think it's when it's just starting to get sexual from what I'm understanding from the transcripts.
She said no. I mean, again, when she said no once and it's on the audio and then she's giggling and laughing literally 30 seconds later, like, and even like the entire time. And that's it's just graphic. And I'm sorry. Like, it's so uncomfortable. It was when things kind of went the wrong way or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. What would happen? And oh, gosh.
Do you feel like you had her full consent?
Of course. Well, I would not even hug somebody if I don't have their consent. I mean, that's preposterous. Like, I'm not that guy. It's like, it's awkward as is to talk to a girl, let alone like be physical with someone. So, I mean, and look, I'm not going to try to get defensive, but she was literally texting her friends that I'm grinding on this guy, hoping he gets the hint.
Yeah.
So where do you make sense of that? I'm just saying, like, you have to look at that whole thing. And she was texting her friend about whatever. That's not my business, but it's awkward for me to even approach a girl or talk to a girl, let alone be physical with someone. And if they're uncomfortable or if I feel like they don't have their consent, nothing moves forward.
Yeah, I think that's where it's difficult. I think this is where, like, the man-woman conversation, this is where it gets complicated because, and I'm not going to defend Veronica, I'll speak for myself and, you know, other women that I know. I think sometimes when we're in those situations, if there is any kind of fear, there's a level of placation. So, like, we're trying to be nice, we're trying to be agreeable, that kind of thing. So it's not something that I would expect you to recognize, but I'm also wondering, you know, if there were just moments, did you have any kind of moments where it was like, we shouldn't be doing this, or, you know, about your rank in the military, anything that was sort of in the back of your mind where you thought maybe we shouldn't be doing this?
I mean, besides the fraternizing thing, in terms of the physical contact, no. I mean, it's not, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
If I would recognize it if someone's uncomfortable, you know, like, I kind of like do this for a living, just as in, you know, being a physician, it's like, I have to read body language and connect with people. Like, you know, it's just like, I have to kind of make people feel comfortable, you know? And if someone's uncomfortable, like in that setting, I would not proceed. And I understand what you're saying though, you know, it's like, and it's a tough situation, but I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry, I'm not getting defensive, but
nope, you can be defensive if you want. I understand it.
And, you know, I'm saying I can't prove the fact that she was fully comfortable, fully, you know, consenting. And I'm not saying she was also, you know, not honest. I don't want to say initiating things, but she was a willing participant, you know, if anything at all. And those are not even my words. Those are like her words to her own friends. I mean, and in the audio, it's like completely apparent. Like, I'm the awkward one, if anything. And I was you know, I was sitting down and she was on top of me. And if anyone ever, you know, says, oh, I want this to stop, 1,000%, you know, it's like, Yeah.
Yeah, I think that sometimes those words are hard to come by. And so, you know,
I know, it's an awkward situation, but I would hope I'm like intelligent enough or like kind of like, you know, aware enough to be like, if someone's uncomfortable, you don't proceed. I mean, my parents have raised me right. I mean, I've never even got into like a bar fight. I've never got into like, I mean, the only thing I have like speeding tickets, you know, like, mm-hmm. and that's it. So this is like my first encounter with the whole legal system. And it's just, yeah, it's unfortunate and whatever has happened, but she was not uncomfortable or whatever. And I don't want to paint her in a bad picture at all. You know, like, yeah. I can't read her mind. I don't know what went through her. Sure. Like I said, I've talked to my therapist about this. I have been feeling bad about this whole thing since it happened. I just wish she didn't say, whatever, you know, like whatever she said, but it's like, it wasn't what she claimed it was. And I don't know why she said it, because I think she was trying to avoid the fraternizing charge as well. You know,
yeah.
I took it, you know, I admit it. And it, you know, it's a big deal. Like I said, a letter goes in your file. You don't get promoted. You don't go, you know, you don't move forward, but I had to own up to it, you know, especially since I am like the male officer or whatever. I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, this is what it is, you know, and like, I will face the consequences mm-hmm. of this mistake. And doesn't matter, you know, what state I was in, which made me kind of act stupid or whatever, you know, that's like a cop out, but it was what it was at that point.
Yeah. Did you ever feel, you know, in the moment, any kind of guilt for being, you know, a higher rank than her and being in this situation or no?
No, I mean, we didn't even act like the rank was not a thing, especially in the reserves, at least, you know, yeah. We were both. Reserves is a different thing, you know, it's a National Guard, rather, you know, it's kind of like you go, you do your thing in for 6 days, but then you're off order. So you're a civilian. It's almost like, and it's such a stereotype, a doctor and a nurse, you know, and that's what I honestly, that's what I went with. And I said, that's what made it comfortable, you know, because I was like, all right, I'm a doctor, she's a nurse. We're both working healthcare, you know, like she's a school nurse. That's what she had told me, at least, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like that unfamiliar in that sense. But you know, you can read the transcript. It's not like I was acting a certain way or, you know, imposing my power or whatever the role or the rank. I wouldn't even know how to do that, you know, like, and if that's implied by like the condition of things itself, like let's say she knows that I'm a, you know, physician and I'm an officer and mm-hmm. she feels a certain way, like what am I supposed to do, right? Like I'm also like, just for a second, if you assume that I'm a good person who comes from a good family who has never done anything wrong in his life,
yeah,
what about me?
Yeah,
someone accuses somebody of this, it's a big freaking deal. Like sure. It's not like a light thing, you know. So I understand that it's harsh for the DA to go after her, but what about me, you know? And like that's why they said, yeah, you're the victim. And that's just like, I have cried about this, you know, in therapy, and like I've thought about this, and I'm like, what was my, oh, like, the mistake was obviously the fraternizing, but I'm like, what led her to claim that? And I can't, again, I can't read her mind, but that was the last thing I expected her to claim. I, you know, whatever her reason was, but
yeah, I think that's like, the big question, honestly. I think that's the big question, like the difference between, you know, sort of how we're thinking about this. You, and I agree, you sound like a really good guy. You are a doctor. You were high, you know, high up ranked in the military. It sounds like you were raised by good people. It sounds like you have a great relationship with your ex-wife and your kids. You do not fit the pattern of a sexual assaulter. I think where the questions are, you know, come up are the difference between men and women and how they interpret situations. And I don't think that you can really...
I can't, you know, like I... It's unfortunate, right? Like, and I think it's something I've recognized and I have to be aware of. Like, this is going to sound stupid. And I don't mean to sound conceited, but like automatically being like a male physician, there is a certain sense of like empowerment, right? Like mm-hmm. if I'm with somebody or with a female, I guess she would feel like, I don't want to say intimidated, but mm-hmm. I guess, but I think you kind of know what I'm saying, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I feel bad because I don't want that power. I mean, honestly, with my colleagues or whoever, I literally, even the nurses, I'm like, hey, this is just Fahad, I'm not your doctor, you know. If I was your doctor, yes, then it's Dr. Perez, you know, then it's professional, but it's like, sure. If we're just working together, I just go by first name because I don't want there to be a power dynamic, because and it's not something I can control, and unfortunately, right?
No,
right,
absolutely not.
Today's society, and it's unfortunate, right? And like, again, I'm not like, let's say, like a tiny petite female who would be in a situation, or like a lower ranking. So I can empathize with that, right? So let's say I'm hanging out with a, was a weird example, but let's say I'm hanging out with like a general or like a colonel.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's like an implied power dynamic. And of course, I want to feel like a little like thrall, you know?
Yeah.
And it's without even like this, I guess, the sexual aspect of it. So it's...
Yeah. I think, yeah, and I think that many, I think many women will be in a situation like this. They're not going to label it as assault. And they don't, maybe they don't report or they don't disclose it because they believe that, you know, there may have been miscommunication. I think it's, I think it is very difficult for women to, and I'll speak just for myself, but if I'm in a situation where I feel uncomfortable and I'm not familiar with the person that I'm with and I'm not sure what they're capable of, I'm going to play nice, obviously. But the idea, that if the second that I say no or the second that I fight back, I am going to be physically harmed. I'm not saying you would do that, but because of the situation,
I know what you're saying, you know, of course. No, I get it. Yeah. But here's the thing, you know, I have tried to think like her and I've tried to put myself in her shoes. And because I've like, honestly, like scratched my head and just kind of like, God, you know, just like thought about it. I'm like, what the hell happened? What the hell happened? And then I'm like, okay, what if she did feel that way? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm a horrible person. You know, if she felt that way. But then I can't reconcile some of her statements, like how I held her down, where I forcefully kissed her, that she got a nosebleed.
Mm-hmm.
None of that is true. You know, none of that. And that's why I'm just like, wow, is she a bad person? You know, like, and that's what I can't reconcile. I'm like, why would she lie to destroy my life? You know, let's say she did feel uncomfortable. Let's say the sex part was, you know, she felt like she had to do it because she was in a garret. Right? Let's assume for a second.
Sure.
But then why would you lie about like all the other things? Like, why would you try to make me look like some fucking monster? You know,
yeah.
Like if it's just the intimacy part, you know, like, and she'd be like, oh, I just felt like, you know, when we started making out, I have to, you know, go along with everything. But then, you know, I mean,
No, and you're fine.
It's hard for me.
I get it.
It's like, what about those statements, you know? Because that's what I couldn't... I'm like, no,
Are you talking about the statements after or the statements about what happened in during?
No. She claimed that, oh, I held her arms down and I was like, I was forceful. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, what? I'm like, where is this even coming from? And not even that. When she turned her phone in, she deleted like most of the audio. She only kept like a certain part. She tried to make it sound like, you know, like it was all like just her being scared and like uncomfortable. And then she claimed she couldn't walk or couldn't see. And I mean, all these things, that's what I can't reconcile. Then I'm like, wow. So if she wasn't comfortable in just the sexual intimacy part, what about all these other statements that she made? And how do they add up? Because I mean, the only evidence really there is besides like, you know, my version and her version is like, you can see her at the gas station. She was, listen, honestly, we were both completely sober, you know, like we had one drink each and the police verified that. They even like checked my credit card transcript, you know, as in how much the total bill was. They looked at the menu and with the food and the appetizer and one drink each, it completely adds up to what I had said initially, you know, versus what she had said, how I got her like four or five drinks and blah, blah, blah. So that's the part I can't reconcile. Like, even if she was uncomfortable, why is she trying to paint me like a monster? Like, unless, and again, this is what hurts me the most. And I'm like, is she just looking out for herself to try to get out of the fraternizing charge? Because that is a thing in the military, unfortunately, that if you claim that, you know, it's like you're automatically put on a profile and, you know, it's almost like you have a, get out of jail card for like a year or two while things are pending, you know, you still get your pay, you still get your benefits and all those things. And that's what it seems like. And I don't want to believe that part. I'm like, nobody could be that evil that they would just for self-preservation destroy somebody else's life, especially somebody they just, you know, went on a date with and were acting like super nice, super friendly, opened up. She talked about her past relationship. And, you know, unfortunately, she was also, you know, she had been in an abusive relationship, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to talk about her business. You know, I don't want to disparage her. But that's the part that hurts me the most. I'm like, wow, am I that bad judge of character? Like, what the hell? You know, like, was she a bad person? And I don't want to believe that because it's just going to make me feel worse. But I can't make sense of some of those statements.
This is one of those spots where I feel like I need to jump in. I'm not sure what Fahad is doing here or what he thinks he understands. Maybe he was given this information by the police. Maybe it's what he tells himself so that he doesn't feel worse than he already does. I'm really not sure. But you, dear listener, know that we went over the breakdown of the bill from Frogs Hollow last week.
here it is in case you need a refresher. We know the bill was $84 and change, and Fahad said they had calamari, a quesadilla, and a burger. So Veronica sent me a breakdown of the cost per item. The burger is $10, the quesadilla, $6. Calamari, which is no longer on the menu, used to be $5. So the food at the very most would have cost $21. Cocktails are $7 each, but they vary in price based on the liquor. One whiskey or bourbon is $5. According to Fahad's testimony at trial, he said, quote, "Honestly, I always like do 20% or more just because of humble beginnings. Yeah, I like to overtip," end quote. So if he tipped 20%, the bill would have been about $70, including tax. So we're looking at 70 minus 21 for the food, leaving $49. The sales tax in Pennsylvania is 6%, so about $4 for tax. That leaves $45 to spend on drinks. Fahad said he had one drink, maybe two. In Veronica's first interview with the police, she said that the most amount of drinks she had was six. Six times seven is $42. That wasn't very hard, was it? Why didn't the investigators at least do the math? One of the things I noticed about Officer Randy Servisky's testimony at trial is that he says that the reason that then-Sergeant, now-Chief of Police Kramer, didn't ask a judge for a search warrant is because no crime happened at Frog's Hollow. But Servisky goes further about Veronica's alleged inebriation or sobriety in the moments when she's walking through the aisle at Funk's gas station. Here's what Servisky said.
Mr. Airgood asked you if you obtained a search warrant for Frog's, how come you didn't do that?
Because we had obtained the footage from Funk showing that she was able to get out of the Jeep, which appeared to be not intoxicated. She was able to walk a straight line. She was able to speak to the attendant asking where the restroom was located. So we already had evidence that we believe she was not intoxicated at the time. In addition, no crime actually occurred at Frog's Hollow.
I want to be clear. No one tested Veronica's sobriety that night. And just because a cop and an alleged rapist say she doesn't look drunk does not make it so. Veronica said she had several strong drinks that night. The amount of the bill backs up her story, not Fahad's.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple of the statements. So let's deal with the bloody nose situation. So Veronica says that you guys were making out and that you sort of came in hard, hit her nose while you were making out, and her nose started bleeding. And then you,
tell me your version.
Well, first of all, that's medically impossible. If somebody hits you and then you got a bloody nose, you're gonna have bruises, and also that's traumatic epistaxis, which is completely different than what she had. She had spontaneous epistaxis. It's a platelet issue and it's a thyroid issue. And I tried to talk to her about her health. Honestly, I like literally paused and I was like, oh, this is so uncomfortable. But I have to, my good conscience, tell you that, you know, you have to get tested. And, you know, she kind of admitted that she was obviously, not obviously, but she was kind of keeping things under the rug with the military because, you know, Air Force has the standards that if you have certain medical issues, you are going to get kicked out. You're going to get med boarded out. Mm-hmm. So I don't think she fully disclosed her issues, but it was a recurrent thing for her to get random nosebleeds. And she was literally sitting there when it started gripping, you know, and we completely paused. I gave her tissues and I'm like, we have to get, you know, Afrin from the gas station. And you can literally see she is completely fine, sober. There are no bruises. She claims that she was drunk and falling over. I mean, honestly, you should watch the video for yourself if you think she's intoxicated.
Yeah, I watched the gas station video. There's not much I can tell.
Can I ask you, do you think, does she look intoxicated to you? And well, you don't have to go into detail. You can say yes if you want to.
I don't know. That's the problem is I see her walking to the bathroom, but I don't know her well enough to know if she's drunk. That's the issue. And, we're in a place where she's claiming she had four or five drinks. She's not a drinker. And you're saying she had one. So I'm trying to get to the bottom of that. I know how much the bill was. I've seen the receipt. I know that the cops went to the bar and asked for their surveillance footage. And the manager or the owner told them that the system was broken. And I know the cops didn't follow up with a warrant, which is usually what they do. So there's no way to like figure that part out. That's the problem.
So do you think she has all five drinks? If you can see the bill and you can see the menu, and if they talk to the bartender, we were the only people sitting at the bar, you know?
Right.
So I am assuming they must have corroborated that story, you know? And
yeah, I mean, I think it depends. It depends on how much you guys had to drink and all that stuff. I would.
We both had appetizers. Yeah. I mean, we both had an entree and we had one drink each. I mean, the total bill was $86. I mean, if you just add up the quesadilla and whatever calamari and like a burger, that's already like $50, yeah, you know, or yeah, something like that. So it's like, where do you get four or five drinks on that tab? I don't know, including the tip. So, I mean, right, do the math yourself, but it's like, it's mind-boggling for her to claim that when everything is electronically trailed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I wish it's something that I could completely corroborate. I mean, I've, you know, done
that's
my due diligence.
That's up to you. Yeah.
No, no, I'm saying I'm trying to corroborate. I'm trying to talk to Frog Silo. And the thing is, and if I could get to the bottom of it, it would be helpful because, you know, there is that legal limit and that goes with consent. You know what I mean? So if somebody is slurring their words, unable to walk, you know, can't sort of move on their own, there's that issue right there that's the end of consent. You know what I mean?
That is the end of consent. I agree with you 1,000%, but I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying, don't you think you would see it somewhat, or like you would hear it somewhat on the audio, like if she was slurring her words or if she was that intoxicated?
Well, I will say to you my observation, because I've only seen the transcripts. When I would love to hear the tape, obviously, because I think that men and women should listen to the tape so that they understand the dynamics of what's happening based on the words that I'm seeing on the page. You know, I will be honest with you. I see sort of a push and pull there for sure. I see her saying no. I'm going to, you know, I'll be honest with you. I see her doing those tactics that women do where they're just like uncomfortable and trying to get out of a situation. That's the way I read it. And by that, I mean, there, you know, were a few instances where, you know, she pretends to call Frogs Hollow. She gets the wrong number. She puts the wrong number in, you know. She talks about how she's celibate and that she's super religious and that she, you know, this isn't what she's looking for. And she talks about, you know, she's trying to set boundaries where she says, you know, you're trying to kiss me, dude, stop. And then she, you know, she wants to go home after the...
Stop. I know, but I mean, that's the thing though, right? I mean, I don't know if that's a complete recording, but when she says those things, I completely stop and pull away. So it's not like it was all coming from me. You know? Like, I mean, physical contact
Listen.
Has to be mutual. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm
no,
just saying, like,
let me be very clear. These situations are not black and white, right? I understand that. You have a perspective. She has a perspective. Neither one of you can know what's going on inside the other person. You know,
I'm just going to try to assume. You know, you're right. I know what you're saying. And like, you're right. I can only observe and make my, you know, best judgment or whatever. But I can't read her mind. And let's say based on her past and, you know, this is so sad. You know, I know she was in a physically abusive relationship. Let's say she did feel scared and let's say she felt threatened. Okay, like, if that's how she felt, I feel shitty, like, that she felt like she had to go along with it and never just be like, hey, I want things to stop or whatever, you know? But if I had ever gotten the impression that she was so inebriated that she can't make a decision, I have been in those situations where girl is in complete mode. Like, and I could refuse to be intimate, but then I'm like, nope, I regret this later. And, like, I'm not gonna, you know, do this if you're, like, sloppy and just, like, falling all over. I've been in those situations, you know? Like, it's...
Let's take a quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to ask Fahad some harder questions, and we're going to start wrapping up this interview.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Have you ever done any forensics work for the county?
I have no idea where that came from. I am from New York, and where the F would I do forensic work? I don't know where that even came from.
I think it came from the fact that Veronica says you had a police badge.
Why? Oh, my God. Why would I have a police badge, or where would I do forensic work, and why would... I mean,
do you have a police badge? I guess that's the question. Do you have a police badge?
Okay. No. I swear to God, I don't have a police badge, and... Don't you think that would be in public record somewhere?
Well, unless it was a fake. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I know. I'm just, because when I heard, for it just hurts when I read those things. I'm just like, oh my God, I wish I could defend myself, because it is so fucking ludicrous. Because I'm like, what can people look that up? Like, I have, my mouth just like literally goes dry. I'm like, you can verify these things. You can look up police records and you can look up employment history. You can look up everything, you know? So isn't that something, you know, people can just easily verify? So why would I lie about that?
Right.
So,
And then going, this goes sort of back to the date, but Veronica, one of the things that Veronica said was that when you guys got into the Jeep, that you had her home address on your GPS. Is that true?
No, she sent me her location at the beginning of the date, and that's what was on my GPS. But while I don't have her address, I still don't have her address.
Okay.
And I honestly, I don't remember the details, but it's whatever she had sent me. She's the one who sent me her like pin or whatever.
Yeah. And then, so a couple of other questions. This is a big conspiracy, and it's probably very difficult to hear, but I need to get you on record if you don't mind. There's another case that is a sex trafficking case that happened in Mechanicsburg, out of Mechanicsburg into Lebanon, with a woman. Her name is Shakana Doyle.
I've heard that, and I have no fucking clue. I'm sorry for the language.
No,
I have
fine.
No clue where that came from. I have no idea how I'm tied to that.
Well, the reason I'm asking you is because she says that you were working with her father, who was the one who was sex trafficking her.
I'm sorry. Like, whose father? The girl's father?
Yeah, Shakana Doyle. Her father was named Roland Doyle. Do you know Roland Doyle?
I have no idea who that person is. I've never heard the name. I know nothing about that, ever. I don't even know where that came from, honestly. I'm sorry, but like, that's not...
It's fine. I have to ask you the question because it's something that people are wanting to know. And then, do you have any close connection with the current chief of police? She was one of the investigators on your case, Devin Kramer. Are you friendly with her or husband or anybody?
I have no relationship with anybody from Pennsylvania except the people who were in my unit. Like, I have no contact with anyone.
Like, never went out to dinner with them or anything like that?
Oh, I swear to God. I mean, no. I have had no contact. The first time I met them was when I went to make a statement.
Got it. And then as far as your military, can you walk me through what happened once your superiors found out about the fraternization? Tell me about your discharge and tell me about benefits and all that stuff so that I can, because I've heard of many different stories. I've heard that it was like, quietly you were discharged and you didn't get any benefits, and then I've heard you were just that was like a normal discharge.
Okay. I just didn't want to deal with it anymore, you know. I didn't want to do that until my name was cleared. So once the police cleared me and then the military reprimanded me, which was you give up, you know, your pay for 1 month and you get it's called an LOR, letter of reprimand, which goes into the file. It just says, you know, obviously you acted in an unprofessional manner, you know, brings the morale down. I mean, it's a very hard thing and it's a shitty thing. And I own up to it, right? It's like, it's a mistake. And yes, it's on me. I made that mistake. And if I had stayed in, it would impact. I think like the letter stays in your file for like a year or two. And if you apply for like another position or like a promotion, it basically stalls your career, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, again, I'm not doing the military for any sort of benefits. I was doing it kind of like when you do volunteer ambulance or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I lose money every time I went out there for like the entire drill.
Yeah.
So I don't need anything from this sounds kind of harsh. No, I love my time in service. I love the uniform, but I didn't need anything from the military.
When did you enlist or how did you what made you want to go into one?
As a medical officer, I always wanted to serve. Like even as a child, I always wanted to serve. And I went through the medical officer route. And when I finished my active duty commitment, I just wanted to move closer to home. You know, my parents are here, my siblings are here. So, but I didn't want to give them the uniform. So when I finished my active duty commitment in 2020, I did what's called the Palace Front, which is on the last day of your active duty, you enroll into reserves or National Guard. So there's no break in service. So literally June 29th, I'm finished with active duty. June 30th, I'm sworn in as Air National Guard.
Got it.
And
okay.
That's June 2020.
Yeah. My stepfather was Air National Guard. I understand some of it. I'm not military myself, but I understand.
Yeah, it's a great option. It's a great option because you have control over your life. You don't get deployed like overseas. And, you know, I had young kids and I have served in combat. I have been deployed and I've dealt with all those things. And it was a choice that I made. I wanted to, you know, my marriage was falling apart. My parents were getting older. So I'm like, I don't want to do active duty, but I still want to serve.
Yeah.
That's why I chose to do the National Guard. But then after this happened, I was like, it was kind of embarrassing. I was kind of ashamed. And I was like, you know what? Once my name clears up, I'm going to resign because it's a lot. lot to be away from my kids also, you know, like 6 days at a time every 2 months, and just not something, you know, I wanted to continue, I guess. And I was like, yeah, I'll just find other volunteer activities if I really want to serve.
Yeah.
So that's that.
This is one of those places in the interview with Fahad that I know nothing about. So I want to bring in a voice that is way more educated in this subject matter than I am. And that's Veronica's current boyfriend, Hunter. Here's Hunter.
They always tell us that, like, yeah, you're on, like, 24-7. Now, there is some differences when it comes to, like, your military statuses, whether you are on an order status, where you are the same as active duty military at that point. You have your inactive duty where you're under guard drills.
Mm-hmm.
Similar thing, your rank still applies there. The only weird thing is civilian technicians when it comes to the guard.
Okay.
And then there's times when you're not really on an on-duty status. But whenever you're, but there's, I should say, like, at any given point, no matter your status, rank does come into play. So that's where the fraternization rule comes into. And there's a lot of different interpretations on that. That comes down to how people in our command chains will interpret that. So I don't want to, like, say too much about that.
Yeah.
But rank does matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter your status, really. Like, at any point, a higher-ranking person can use that and has that over a lower-ranking person. And it absolutely does matter. To say it doesn't matter in the Guard is just a flat lie. It makes it sound like we're, like, this unprofessional. It's, like, this unprofessional organization that no one cares what you do.
Right.
And that's just false, because you have to have that good order and discipline. That's what's mentioned in the fraternization law, whether you're looking at the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 133 or 134,
mm-hmm.
they reference good order and discipline. And you can't have that if you don't have the rank structure. And the rank, it matters. That's why we have a command structure. That's why there's a command structure there. That's why it exists. That's why rank exists. That's why you wear it on your uniform, so people know what your rank is.
Yeah.
I will say, in his case, there is a kind of special carve out in a few areas of the military where rank starts to get blurry. Medical is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Medical officers do not have the ability to take command in the sense of being a commander, in the sense of being like a wing or a brigade commander, something on those lines. They can't take those positions just due to the position that they're in.
Okay.
And you also have, like, the ability for a doctor to be a medical professional in any capacity, whether they're a nurse, a doctor, whatever, in there, to work with their patient. Because, let's say, you know, the wing commander, a full bird colonel, an 06, comes into medical and is talking to a nurse who is a senior airman, a Lance Corporal, a private, or any sort of sergeant. So either, like, your E4s, your E5s, your E6s. And when I use, like, the O and E designations, that's just, like, that's across the board to all branches.
Okay.
And E4 is an E4. And the Army and the Marines, the Navy, the Air Force, they just title them differently. Privates and senior admins and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But an E4 is an E4. An O6 is an O6. And basically, you go start from E1 up to E9, and then O1 up to O10, in that order.
And E is enlisted, and O is officer. Is that correct?
That's correct, okay. Yes.
And so, sorry to interrupt you, just really quickly, I think that that ranking does matter to Fahad because he kept it from Veronica.
Absolutely.
So he knew. I mean, the bottom line is he knew that what he was doing was wrong. He even being a doctor, I mean, he had this double whammy of power over her, being that he was higher ranked and also a doctor. And he was using the fact that he was a doctor in the conversation by saying, I'm being a bad doctor right now, you know, and then eventually asking her not to tell anybody, and not to tell anyone she'd been drinking, not to tell anyone that they had sex. And so it's like, he can say all day long that ranking doesn't matter, but
he used it to his advantage and hid facts from her because he knew that it was a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a big deal. You know, that's where the good order and discipline comes in. That's where the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is the laws that govern the military, specifically said in 133 and 134, they talk about good order and discipline. That's where they talk about fraternization. Mm-hmm. When you affect that, that's where you start to break down that command chain. And we also saw this years ago in basic training in the Air Force, where military training instructors are using their rank and their position. So that's where you're talking about, like, the doctor as well as, like, the position, not only the rank.
Right.
To take advantage of people. It was a huge scandal that happened within, particularly the Air Force, back in the 2011, 2010 timeframe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a similar concept. That rank matters, and using power against the lower enlisted people is just, frankly, to me, disgusting.
Yeah.
I find it reprehensible as someone who would not do that.
The last question I have, which is kind of a big one, is I've had a couple of people, other women, reach out to me who have been on dates with you and said they had similar experiences to Veronica, or they at least felt very uncomfortable and had red flags about the situation. Is there anything that you want to talk to me about, you know, other relationships you've had with other women that, you know, maybe were similar, or maybe they weren't read right? Just, you know, I have to verify it, you know?
Of course. I don't know who, and I don't, I mean, look, the only person I know of that you talked to, which I was going to ask, and I'm sorry, like, I don't know, you don't have to tell me, but, like, I'm on good terms with all my exes, like, including, you know, and she was the one, like, what, you know, this whatever effing person is, whatever, you know, I'm like, thank you for letting me know, you know?
Yeah, and I'm really appreciative that you reached out to me. I really am, honestly.
No, I'm just kind of like, if I had something to hide, you know, like, if I was like, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, I was like, yeah, I have nothing to hide. I've always told the truth. I've always offered up anything and everything that is asked of me. I mean, it's a good reminder when you say that, right? Or not a good reminder, but I mean, I think there was another girl who, like, who knew every girl that I have dated. It's just kind of like, since the incident, it's something I have to disclose, you know?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things, you know, you have to disclose. I think it's the right thing to do.
I agree.
And so they've all known about it. And the only person who later came back and be like, oh, by the way, I also felt like you were really pushy. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry you felt that way, was this girl that I went on, like, two dates with, also from Pennsylvania, actually. And that's the only person, honestly, whoever, like, said that. I'm so sorry, like, you felt that way. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Like, I'm so awkward if you, like, observe me, like, on a date. And I'm like, if that's the case, like, that's why I just, like, stop dating, you know? I'm like, oh, maybe I'm just coming across that way. And, like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong if I'm coming across that way. Like, if is it just because, like, I'm, you know, it sounds so, like, douchey, but, like, if I'm just, like, a tall, good-looking physician, is it automatically, like, a, so, you know, a position of power? I don't know. And I'm a bubbly guy. I can be gregarious. I can be, like, social and, like, super talkative. So is that what they mean by being pushy? I have no idea. But it's a good self-reminder that you, the other person, as in our perceptions are our own perceptions.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is.
Yeah,
like, I could think one thing and the other person could think one thing. And, like, it's sometimes it doesn't line up. But I don't have an answer, really, when you say that, except for that one person, you know?
I mean, I think it's good that if she felt uncomfortable, she came and told you. I think that's why this kind of communication is great, so that we can all sort of clue into what maybe someone else is feeling, male and female. And this obviously doesn't just happen between men and women. It happens in, you know, all genders. But I think, you know, I just want to say thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
I didn't even want to say, I don't, I'm honestly, and I've been searching, like, deep inside myself, like, for a lesson, right? As in, like, what can I learn, like, from this, like, never go out with a younger girl, you know, like, never, honestly, I don't know, because
I mean, I can tell you, I can give you some advice if you want it.
Sure.
From a woman, just communicate. If it comes to a place where a woman is saying to you, you know, no, don't do that, it's okay to ask them questions. Am I making you uncomfortable? Should I stop doing that? Like, I teach some, you know, sort of not sex ed, but dealing with situations between men and women. And I think because we are so different, in the world. That's
the point.
The most important thing is the next time you're on a date, someone might be acting weird, or maybe they say no, or maybe they say, don't do that. Say, I'm really sorry. Can you explain to me what you're feeling? Honestly, when that conversation happens, there's no more gray area. We're getting into the black and white category. And and it's not just you. I'm not saying it's just on the man. I'm saying that women do this too. We really have to communicate. We really have to say, okay, you said this to me. What does that mean to you? You know what I mean? And I know that's like a total boner killer, honestly. But
No. Look, I appreciate that advice because, I mean, first of all, yes, there are, well, there's verbal communication and there's nonverbal communication, right? So if sure. I feel like someone's uncomfortable, if someone says that, I immediately, like, I mean, I wish you could see what happened inside the car. Like, if I'm trying to make out with her and she said, oh, no, I'm physically backing off, putting my hands up, you know? And, like, that's an automatic response or a reflex for me. And yeah. I hope I did that because that's what's going through my head. If someone made the comment like that, I'm, like, sure. backing off, putting my hands up, like, saying, like, hey, look, you're safe. I'm not, like, pushing anything. Like, I'm never going to do anything against your will or, like, you know, impose myself or make you uncomfortable. And I really hope I don't. I mean, something I wish for, like, in my daily interactions with anyone, you know, sure. I hope I'm not making anyone uncomfortable, even with, like, the words I say. I hope I'm not hurting someone's feelings or making someone yeah. feel bad, you know. That's just, like, a daily goal. Or it should be a goal for everyone, right? Like, be
absolutely.
Nice to people, be kind to people, be make people feel comfortable. So,
and I think we can still have those intentions and still misread right. a situation. So absolutely. I think it's, like, like, clear communication. That's why I think that, like, we're doing that right now. I appreciate your perspective. I'm trying to tell you where I'm coming from. I'm asking you absolutely. Hard questions. This is good. This is good for the world. So, anyway, I appreciate your time. I know you've been through a lot.
Thank you, Mel.
Thanks for listening, y'all. I'm going to leave it here. If you want to hear the entire interview with Fahad Pervez, you can join us on the private In Between Investigator Club. Link is in the show notes. As for next week, we're getting into the DA next week on the In-Between.
The district attorney is married to a police officer. She was previously reprimanded because she took on a case that was in her husband's department. And it was two police officers who had shot a woman. By the way, they love to silence women. It was two police officers who had shot a woman, and she apparently let them off easy.
She gave me the vibe all the time. You know, it seemed to be getting worse and worse as she liked to send people to jail. And it just bothered me, you know, and it just...
Every time that someone gives an untruthful, deceitful account, it brings greater scrutiny and it brings more doubt to those true victims. So you look at this person that every 68 seconds in America is sexually assaulted, and when they want to come forward and they want to give their statement, they are less likely to be believed because of people like Veronica Rodriguez.
So we've been in the middle of Veronica's trial. The district attorney, Peter Hess, was down there, sitting down and kind of just being belligerent regarding the case. Was very annoyed with the case. And then she ended up making a remark, basically stating, okay, I have to go upstairs and watch Amy make this bitch cry. And that is verbatim.
The In-Between podcast is written, edited, and hosted by me, Mel Barrett, and is a production of Ruby Grace Productions. If you want ad-free exclusive content, bonuses, and lives, head on over to the In-Between podcast Patreon and sign up. The researcher level starts at $6, and there's already 20-plus ad-free episodes for you to binge right now. Special thanks to Amber Hunt for editorial guidance, as well as the rest of the team at Grab Bag Collab, Amanda Rossman, and Daisy Egan, for their support and guidance. Another special thanks to Rebecca Lavoie for her friendship and mentorship. You can catch me and Rebecca recapping the Karen Reed trial on the Crime Writers On, The Readathon. Follow the In-Between podcast on Blue Sky, Facebook, and YouTube at In-Between Pod, and on Instagram at The In-Between Pod Official. On TikTok, you can follow me at Jack of All Trades DC. Thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.